Okay, so this is the Whole Man Academy podcast, episode 131. We are back with a belter after a little break since we launched the membership, the network, which I'll be talking about another time. But today I've got something really special because I'm always trying to find guys who aren't someone you would have gone, oh yeah, I've heard all these, you know, I've heard him three or four different times on all these different podcasts. And I've got one today with Jeff Buhner. Now, I'm probably going to still cock up his name, but I have double checked it because I knew I'd fuck it up. He's the author of Sultan's Seven Secrets, and he's a successful entrepreneur, which is different to some entrepreneurs I know that say that, but they aren't very successful. So, Jeff, let's start off with how are you and where are you?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. I tell everybody I'm a spoiled brat, and I just want to keep it that way. I'm in St. George, Utah, small town. And, Anthony, I really appreciate you having me on. I think we're going to have a fun discussion today.
I've been looking forward to it all day. And I'll tell you what's funny is we've got three boys, but the one that's six and one that's four, they've already said they're going to take over the Whole Man Academy one day, which I always find very funny. But they like to say, well, who are you talking to tonight, Dad? And I'm trying to explain, and I couldn't really explain, because I said to you before we start recording, when I'm talking to just a CEO or a footballer or a special forces guy, I can kind of eloquently produce an example of what I'm talking about. But tonight I was like, I don't know where to start. So this is why it's cool to speak to you. But tell me first, and the guys that are listening, I mean, I don't usually go and say, give me your backstory, but I think with you, you're going to have a really interesting lead up to what we'll talk about. So give us a kind of a backstory of your history up to the point where you had let's call it a life-changing experience.
I will. I'm going to lead to what I'm about to teach you today or talk about today, tell you about today, however you want to think about it. But what if there was a language that you're speaking right now that anything you say in that language, and it has nothing to do with the words that come out of your mouth, anything you say in this language, the world will obey your commands?
It's got to be something you've got to be interested in.
Would you think that was crazy?
That'd be great.
At the age of 34, I came across, well, it was 33, I was, and I came across that basic statement. Prior to that, I'll just give you a little background. I was the guy that you would have had no interest in getting to know. If you came to a stoplight and I was next to you, I'd be in an old work truck with a wheelbarrow in the back and a bucket of concrete tools. And I was surly. I was cross. I felt like, I was just overworked. Life was difficult for me. And I wasn't the kind of guy that you'd try to strike up a conversation with. You might even be a little concerned about doing that.
Yeah.
Just the look on my face and, my countenance. And that's the state I was in when one more thing got piled on me. I was working from long before my family awoke to usually after the children at least had gone to bed.
Yeah.
That was my day. I was up at 5:30, out of the house at 6:15 in the morning. At 5 o'clock, my crew would go home, but not me. That's when I'd go out selling new jobs, collecting money, picking up things we needed for the next day. I never got home. Well, rarely got home before 7:30 or 8 at night.
A long old day.
This was my life, and holidays meant nothing to me. Saturdays meant nothing to me. That was just a normal work day.
Yeah.
I'd take like Christmas and Easter and the big holidays off, Thanksgiving. But I had to work to keep up with this monster that owned me as much as I owned it. My company, you know.
Mm. And what was the company?
Buhner Farron Concrete. So we were flat work contractors.
Yeah.
And listen, I made plenty of money as long as nothing went wrong.
Yeah.
But things went wrong. One of my sons cost $60,000 and I had no insurance. And I made about $60,000 a year, just to put that in perspective. So those kind of things, I was drowning financially, even though I had a successful company, you could say. But about that same time, my wife let me know that she wasn't happy. And here's the thing, Anthony, I thought she appreciated how hard I was working. I thought she really appreciated that I was covering the bills.
Yeah.
But when she told me that wasn't enough, you know, I never did anything fun with her. I never did anything fun with the kids. I never helped out with the kids. I had no free time.
Yeah.
And that was devastating to me. That was the moment in which I literally thought, I'm not going to go kill myself, but if I were to get hit by a Mack truck, as long as I didn't see it coming, fine yeah. with me.
Yeah.
You know, fine with me. I was so tired, frustrated. Well, I happened to go pour a bunch of concrete for this couple that was obviously very wealthy. They were refurbishing this beautiful home in a beautiful neighborhood. And they were everything I wanted to be.
Mm.
But I could see no way to get there.
Yeah.
And they were old. I call them old, but they were probably younger then than I am now. But they had the silver hair, you know, so I thought, golly, these old people. But they were elegant. They were fun people. And they were nice to us, which was kind of rare.
Mm.
When we do work for wealthy people, they didn't come out and hang out with the concrete crew. You know, these people did. Well, one day I was talking to the woman, wonderful person, just so sweet and smart and elegant in every way. But I happened to start complaining. It didn't start out that way, but it ended up with me kind of bellyaching
yeah.
about I work so hard, yet I can't have what you know. In the middle of that, she turned around and walked away. It's a very embarrassing moment for me. But thankfully, she came back
yeah.
and placed a manuscript in my hands. It's a stack of papers about an inch thick. And she said, read this tonight and bring it back to me in the morning. Okay, I wasn't going to read it. I mean, I just told you what my day consists of.
I'm busy.
Yeah, read it in, you know, tonight and bring it back to you tomorrow. So, but that night I read the first page and I stayed up the rest of the night reading the whole thing and taking notes. Now, here's why I did that. In the very first section, it tells the story of a man named Sultan Musa of Mali. Now, he didn't start, he wasn't, you know, his father wasn't a sultan. In fact, his father died when he was very young, and this plunged him and his mother into unbelievable poverty. Sure. He had to literally steal food to stay alive. His mother couldn't guarantee him even one meal a day. This is the kind of poverty he was in. At the age of 12, he had a near-death experience, which is a great story all by itself, that an older thief that he fell in with tried to murder him instead of share the bounty with him on a heist that they committed together.
Yeah.
And he survived this, but he had what we would call an out-of-body or near-death experience,
right,
in which he met, his words, a man made of light and love who taught him all kinds of crazy stuff, how the world works, how humans are designed, how we work, why some people go out and just create and build skyscrapers and create phones, cell phones, and figure out TV, how that works. And other people just don't do anything.
Yeah.
They can't they don't create anything. They
consume.
They're unhappy. Yeah. So why? Why does one person go crazy creating stuff and someone else doesn't do any of it?
Mm.
He was taught this. And in this manuscript, one of the things he was taught was this thing called, that he called, the language of the gods. And that's the language I referred to in the beginning, that he said, anyone who speaks this language, the world obeys their commands. Okay, well, that grabbed me. I was like,
yeah, tell me more.
Exactly. And you know what, Anthony, I thought, He's not going to tell me. This is going to be a whole story. Right? I never get around to tell me how to speak this language of the gods.
Yeah.
Now, I was wrong. The very next paragraph, he taught me how to do it. Now, to teach you how to do it, I have to go back to something. By the way, when he came back from this experience, he used the principles, and I've kind of, you know, I did counted them up. There were seven basic principles.
Yeah.
So that's why the Sultan's Seven Secrets. But he used these principles, what he was taught, to become what some people say is the wealthiest man ever to walk the earth. And this was clear back in the 1300s in Africa.
Yeah.
Now, to put this in perspective, you've heard names like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. He was wealthier than both of those guys combined.
Colossal amount of money.
Just, yeah, tons of money. There's a story where he went through Mecca and he gave away so much gold on his way through Mecca with this huge caravan. You know, people had run out to meet the caravan and they'd throw gold coins. He gave away so much gold that it collapsed the Egyptian economy. And he's in the history books for that.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know anything about this when I read about him. But it caught my attention that he was wealthy, but that wasn't all. I mean, the guy, his love life was the thing of fairy tales. You know, he was so generous. All the people loved him. He lifted the entire kingdom out of poverty. But he wrote extensively. And he wrote everything that he could remember about his encounter with the man made of light and everything the man made of light and love taught him. But he also wrote a fairy tale and embedded the secrets in this fairy tale, which is a metaphor for everything else, a metaphor for his own life.
Mm.
Now, why would he do that? To stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
Think about this. He's in, you don't just come out in the 1300s and say, "Hey, everybody, I died yesterday, but then I came back to life and I met God who taught me things that our most learned scholars know nothing about." Okay, that's an easy way to get yourself killed, if not imprisoned.
Yeah.
So he wrote this fairy tale and he would use it as a segue to teach. He was very benevolent. He wanted to teach everybody what he knew, which was basically how to seize control of your life, how to be one of those people who creates if you want to.
Mm.
Or if you're tired of creating, how to be one of those slackers that doesn't do anything. You can be anything you want.
Yeah.
And he would teach people how to do it. And of course, you know, they all wanted to do better. And he lifted that entire Mali kingdom into a way higher standard of living. Well, if anyone called him out, he would say, "Hey, it's just a great story. I'm just teaching my opinion. This has worked for me," type thing. And he would use the story to teach the principles until he really trusted you. Then he might go into more detail.
Yeah,
big deal. But he had to be careful. So I've written things. You've written books, right? You've written things. I don't expect that 300 years, 600 years later, the whole world is familiar with anything Jeff Buhner has written.
Yeah.
His fairy tale is familiar to almost everyone on earth. That's how brilliant this guy was. Now, I'm going to go to the fairy tale so that it will make sense when I tell you how to speak the language of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
The fairy tale is Aladdin and the Magic Lamp.
Right.
Antoine Gallant was 100% honest about this. He never wrote it. He just translated it from ancient Arabic texts written by Sultan Musa of Mali. He also translated the second parchment, the part I was talking about that has the tutorial on how to speak this language of the gods and all of the teachings of the man made of light and love. But Antoine only published the fairy tale.
Okay.
He never published a second manuscript because he was terrified of it. Mm-hmm. It talked about God, near-death experiences, spirit bodies, physical bodies, spirit world, stuff that really could have gotten him in a lot of trouble, even in the 1600s.
I was going to say, it sounds like the kind of thing where it's so difficult for a lot of people to comprehend, to think anything outside of what they can see and feel, that people kind of distrust it or they're fearful of it.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, in the 1600s, people were still put to death for the crime of heresy.
Mm.
And, you know, we were talking prior to the show that there are certain things you have to be careful. You can't just say anything, even today.
Yeah.
You know, 2023.
Yeah.
So think about the 1600s. Anyway, he published the fairy tale. Now I'm going to go to the fairy tale and teach you what he learned. What there are three main elements of the fairy tale.
Hmm.
And I'm going to tell you what each one represents. And then we'll go into how do you speak this language of the gods that the world obeys when you speak it.
Yep. It sounds good to me.
And I'm going to tell you this, Anthony, when you hear it, you're going to know, if you're anything like me, I knew instantly, oh my gosh, this is how it works. This is exactly how it is. In fact, it might actually piss you off when you hear it, because it's so simple, so easy that you think, how did I not see that? How did I not know that? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Well, all right, let's talk about the three elements of the fairy tale, and then we'll jump into this.
All right, so what's number one?
Number one, we have Aladdin. It's the main character. Aladdin represents the conscious you, the conscious mind, that part of you that you think of as you, that part of you that cares about how things are going in your life. That's Aladdin, the conscious mind. Okay, now we have the all-powerful genie who can get you anything you want if you know how to summon the genie, if you know how to command the genie in the voice it obeys.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the next best part of the whole fairy tale, you know, the magic lamp. We all wish we had one of those. Well, you do. The magic lamp represents some knowledge, some understanding of the communication that's always taking place between the conscious and the veiled mind, which is represented by the inner genie, your inner genie. It's, we're all used to the concept of a subconscious mind.
Mm.
That's the inner genie. Why? Because whatever your subconscious mind believes to be true about you, it will make true in your physical world. If you believe on a core, deep level that you're going to be poor, and I'm not talking about believing it in your head, talking about it. You might go around telling people, no, I'm going to be rich someday. I'm talking about how you really feel subconsciously.
Deep.
And I'll tell you how you can know in a minute. That is the way it's going to be. And it's so easy to see in other people, a little harder to see in yourself, but if people believe on a subconscious level that other people like them, other people are easy to get along with, that's how it is for them. And conversely, if they believe people are mean, people aren't nice, and I have nothing to offer, and they believe that deep down, that's how it is for them.
Yeah.
Well, why? I mean, very simply, you've seen people walk into a room. They might even look similar. They might have similar traits. But one of them, you say hi to him, and he's like, yeah. The other one, you say hi, and he's like, hey, man, haven't I seen you before? What's your name? What do you do for a living?
Lights up the room.
So now the guy who just said hey and looks down and depressed and nobody comes over to talk to him can take that as evidence that people aren't very nice. They don't treat him very well. Okay, so you see how this works. But it's a lot deeper than that. Your inner genie, your subconscious mind is the mechanism that controls and steers your life. And you can take that to the bank. It has the power to make anything it believes to be true about you true in your quote unquote reality. Okay, well, this brings us to an interesting question. Who told it what to believe? Who's telling it what to believe?
Where does it get the information from?
You are. You have been since you were a little kid. You're doing it right now. But not in the language that's coming out of your mouth, not words, not even thoughts. Now, your subconscious mind is aware of all your words, all your thoughts, but it is not programmed by those. It does not obey them. It doesn't respond to them as a command at all. The language it believes and obeys every time, all the time, it never disbelieves this language, is the language of feelings. Feelings is the language of the gods. So you can lie your head off with your mouth, you know, oh, I'm fine. No, everything's great.
I'm good.
But how are you feeling? Let me ask you this. Honestly, think about it. How do you feel about your career? How do you feel about the amount of money you have in the bank? How do you feel about your health, your level of fitness? How do you feel about your primary romantic relationship or lack of one? Now, when you think of any aspect of your life, you're going to immediately feel a certain way. Why? Where does that come from? It's your subconscious mind. It holds all your memories, all your experience. And when you think about wealth, for example, it will feed you what it will tell you instantly, that fast, what it believes to be true about you and wealth, you and your relationship, you and fitness. Okay, so already you're going to see that I've just slammed into a wall in the way you see things. Because you're going to say, wait a minute, Jeff, I feel bad about my finances because I'm $800,000 in debt and, you know, make $400,000 a year. And that usually, okay. So what you're saying is reality dictates how you feel. And that's true. But what if I were to tell you that it's the exact other way around? Reality is what it is because of your deep subconscious beliefs, how you feel. I'm going to prove this to you.
Yeah. Because I agree. I think, as you said, for someone listening might say, oh, well, you know, let's say they're, you know, mortgage, the interest rates in the UK and the US, which are obviously deliberately manipulated anyway, but they've gone up to like 5-6%. So people could say, I've got a big mortgage and I'm not earning enough money. I've got more going out. I've got coming in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're like, no, don't let that cloud this at the moment.
Okay, here's something I'm going to tell you that's absolutely true, but you're going to have to let this percolate onto your brain a little bit. Your subconscious mind has access to all wisdom, all knowledge. It's connected to everybody else's subconscious minds. It is literally connected to God. It already knows about that $10 million idea. It already knows who your business partner should be, but it is not going to share that information with you unless it thinks that it's congruent with the role you're playing or what it believes is true about you. And that's all you're doing. You're playing a role right now. But this role is important because you're learning from it. You're in character. You're dedicated to this role. But you know as well as I do, you could decide to reinvent yourself, change your role, do something else, get out from under that and go try this if you wanted to, if you had the courage.
Yeah.
So think of yourself as an actor on a stage. That's the conscious mind. And think of the subconscious mind, the veiled mind, or the inner genie, as a stage manager and a really good one. Like that stage manager has access to any props. But if you're out there playing, what, out of Africa, it's going to put on the stage everything that supports the role of out of Africa. And it's going to keep everything off of that stage that's not congruent with the role you're playing. Mm-hmm. Congruency is everything to your subconscious mind. If you change a subconscious belief, and you can, and I'm going to teach you how. If you change a core belief, which means you've changed the role you're playing, whether slightly or drastically, it will immediately go to work, resetting the stage of your life so that it's congruent with that new role you're playing or the new subconscious beliefs you've set. Now, all of your subconscious beliefs were set like a cog by an event accompanied by strong emotion. Mm. So if you got up as a little kid and you were supposed to sing a song in front of all the parents and the other kids, and you froze, you forgot your lines, and one of the other kids snickered, and maybe worse, a parent snickers.
Yeah, someone laughs at you.
Yes. Now what? Well, you have, from that moment on, until something else happens, you will never perform again. You know, I will never stand up in front of a crowd again. It'd take 20 horses to drag me onto a stage, and I still will not open my mouth. Okay, so because a subconscious belief was set, nothing has changed. That's how all of your subconscious core beliefs are set. And this idea that all of your subconscious beliefs were set by the age of 7, whoever said that, I better not call them names, but just that's hogwash. It is not true.
Yeah.
It's still that way. An event can happen right now, today, accompanied by strong human emotion, and you will either pave over an old subconscious belief or set a brand new one.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an idea of how that works using the same example of getting up and singing a song. So at the age of 7, you have this core belief that you're not a performer and you're not ever going to try it again. But let's say something weird happens when you're 20, you get in, you're passionate, you start talking about something to maybe one person and you're fine doing that. You have a subconscious belief that you can talk to one person, maybe two, and you're passionately talking about something that you understand. And all of a sudden, behind you, somebody starts to clap, and you turn around, and 4 or 5 people are clapping, and they're like, "You get them, girl, or you get them, brother. That's absolutely right. You are dead on." Okay, in that moment, there's an event, and there's emotion attached to it because people clapping when you say something brings up strong emotion.
That's good.
From that moment on, you have a new subconscious belief that may have paved over the old one completely, like erased it. And now you think, hey, that wasn't so bad. I did good. I could get up in front of, say, 8 people and give the same talk or anything I really know my business about. This is how it works. Okay, if you are right now programmed to have a bad relationship, mm-hmm. or you're programmed to just never save money, even if you get a windfall, it seems to just dissipate and goes away. Someone else might be programmed to like turn 100,000 into 200,000, and they do it all the time, but not you. You get 100 grand and it just goes, and pretty soon
money. For the guys listening, money would be a big one, because from so many of the guys that have either joined the Whole Man Academy kind of membership and or guys I spoke to, when you talk to them about the common things going on, so many of them, it's wanting more money. And that doesn't mean because they necessarily want to buy Lamborghinis and buy diamond, you know, necklaces. It's because they want to, you know, money is so important to be able to provide for family and feeling of pride and what have you. So money is a big, big one.
Well, even if you do want to use it to buy a Lamborghini and a lot and 3 mansions, well, that's okay. some people do that. You may not want to out of wisdom or whatever, but it's all your subconscious belief. If you're programmed to believe that you really, it's wrong to make much more than 100 grand a year because rich people are evil and they probably do it by, you know, grinding the face of the poor. And a lot of people have this one.
Yeah. Do you think also that could come from if you've not grown up with a lot of money, if your parents, of course, have got that, you know, a scarcity mindset, that is going to feed into you and probably enforce it because they haven't got money and they look at bad, they think it's bad because people have got lots of money. It's really, really interesting.
Hey, these subconscious beliefs can come from anything. It can come from having a parent who is very, very wealthy and you watch them. You don't respect the way they treat people. You don't want to turn into them. Next thing you know, you're programmed to not. You think consciously you want to have a lot of money, but deep down you don't want to be like them. So you don't want to have that kind of money.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's the reverse, isn't it? You're pushing against having money because you feel it will make you a bad person.
All right. The language of the gods is feelings. I'm going to skip to the good stuff right now. No matter how you are programmed, no matter what your subconscious beliefs are right now, no matter what your inner genie believes that your role is, the conscious mind has the power and the authority. You have every right to decide and determine what role you want to play, what life you want to experience. Now, I'm going to give you a little taste of this before I go into too far down that road. When I read about this language of the gods, I recognized right off the bat, you know, oh yeah, everything, like the way I make my money, I've felt this way since I was a kid, that it was wrong to make your money any other way than hard physical labor. I grew up on a farm, all the kids around me, we talked about how hard we worked. We took pride in how many bales of hay we touched that summer.
Like a badge of honor.
It's a badge of honor. And we had names for people who didn't earn their money that way. Slick Willies, Pitchmen, City Slickers, and we didn't look highly upon those people. So now I'm out there in the world, my conscious mind wants to make a lot more money and have a lot more free time, but I have this deep subconscious belief that it's wrong.
Yeah.
And you don't just change your subconscious beliefs because you say you want to, or you tell everyone you're going to. No, they're serious. Mm. They run your life. But like I said, you do have the authority and the ability to change them. Well, all you have to do is command your inner genie in the language it obeys. And I already told you that the magic lamp represents something very real. Mm-hmm. And that's this understanding that the language you command it in has nothing to do with words. It's feelings. Okay, so if you look at your reality and it is what it is, you're going to feel the feelings associated with your reality.
Yeah, your current situation.
You can't look over there to change your feelings. So where do you look? Here comes your superpower. This is your ability to imagine and pretend. You were a born pro at doing this as a kid. You came into the world pretending. You could get lost in a make-believe world at the snap of the fingers and stay there for hours. And nothing about reality. Think about this. When you were a kid playing whatever you were playing, prince, princess, you turn the world around you in your imagination into a castle. And these were your Arabian horses and whatever you had in your imagination, not only you, but all of your friends or your brothers and sisters, you all got lost in it and you'd play your roles. And it didn't matter that you were living in a crappy rental while your dad was trying to get back on his feet or that you were in a junkyard. Yeah. You blitzed all that out of your mind and just created a make-believe world. Okay, you were taught to quit doing that. You were actually scolded for doing it if you got into school and you were still getting lost in a make-believe world. Mm. And you heard phrases like, Anthony, you got to get your head out of the clouds, man. You got to get with reality. You got to get with the program.
Just
you
know, a dream,
you're living in a fantasy world. Anthony, you need a big dose of reality.
Yeah.
No, you don't. You've had plenty of that, and it's put you where you are.
Mm.
If you want to change things, what you need is a giant dose of make-believe. This is where your power is. Do not make the mistake of glossing over this. Listen to me right here. This is the most important thing I'm going to tell you today. And to give you a taste, when I finally started doing this, when I finally figured it out, and learned how to change my feelings about every aspect of my life that I wanted to change.
Mm.
One of them was finances.
Yeah.
I went from being a $60,000 a year concrete guy to, within a relatively short period of time, making three times that much every month, not in a year, yeah, every month. Now, I had changed, okay, here I'll say it this way. To drastically change your life, you literally have to become a different person.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting the life right now of the person you are based on your subconscious beliefs. That's what's running the show, 100%. So if you want to change your life, you got to become a different person, which means you have to think differently and you have to feel differently. Back to pretending, which is how you've learned everything.
Mm-hmm.
When you get lost, and it might be a little hard to do right now because, you know, you're not used to doing that. You might even think it's wrong to do. But if you get lost in a really great daydream of, say, you owning your own Caribbean island and you're shooting across those beautiful, clear, turquoise blue waters with anyone you want on the back. You can have it be a supermodel. You can have it be anyone you want. When you get lost in a daydream like that and you really let it roll, what do we do when we get to the shore? What kind of house do I have on my island? And you get into this. How much money do I have in the bank? Holy crap, that's a lot. That's cool. Okay, you will instantly feel the emotions associated with that experience, and your subconscious mind, who, by the way, is feeding you those feelings and answering the question of what would it feel like to have an island of my own? It will feed you those feelings instantly because it doesn't care what role you pick. That's not its job. It will just support whatever role you pick. That's its job. Okay, change your feelings, change your life. So let's say you are lost in this dream of having your own private island and you're married to a supermodel and you go into your home on the island, you open up the safe and it's just stacked with $10,000 packets to the brim, all the way back, all the way to the top, all the way to the sides. And you pretend to pull out some of that money and you pretend to spend it. What would I pay off? What would I buy? Who would I help? And you get lost in this. Okay, you're going to know it's not real. It's just a daydream, right? Okay, but what about the feelings that you're generating by holding hundreds of thousands of cash in your hands and seeing it and feeling what it's like?
Smelling.
Are the feelings real? Yes, absolutely. They're 100% real. Your subconscious mind does not differentiate all that much between an experience and the feelings associated with it that you have in quote unquote reality or a make-believe scenario. Okay, I better prove this one too. Everything that you call a real experience is interpreted by your imagination. Your imagination puts value on it. Your imagination fills in the gaps of things you don't know about it. For example, one kid could walk down, you know, through the halls of the mall, and three girls walk past, and they kind of nudge each other, and they all look over at him, and they giggle and laugh as they keep walking. And then it happens to another kid. Now, the first kid, he thinks, ah, those girls like me. They think I'm cute.
Checking me out.
How does he know? He has no idea. He didn't get to talk to him. The next kid, though, same experience. Exactly. Thinks, yeah, those girls are laughing at me because of my haircut and the clothes I'm wearing, or I'm not very handsome. And that happens to me all the time. Girls are always snickering at me. Okay. Same experience. Two different imaginary scenarios that they dreamed up in their head that made them feel a certain way. And those feelings are real. Their subconscious minds are listening to them, and they will keep their lives congruent with their predominant feelings. So you want to change how you feel about your opportunities to make money. You want to change how you feel about the good ideas, good usable ideas, money-making ideas coming to you. You know, I told you, your subconscious mind already knows about those ideas. Everything you want, those ideas, the business partner, perfect sweetheart, they're already out there. Everything you want already exists in this place called out there somewhere. Even the change in your own relationship, you may not want a different person. You might just want a better relationship with your sweetheart. But it's not good right now. How do you change it?
Improve it,
yeah. How do you turn that bad relationship into a relationship that you love? You're fulfilled. You're not discontented anymore. Everything is wonderful. Your stinking subconscious mind already knows exactly how to do that, and it's not telling you. Until what? You flood it with the feelings of what you want. And again, you can't look to reality, so you got to find some time to get lost in make-believe. Now, I'm going to tell you, you're going to need some help at this. You talk about subconscious beliefs and training and experience. Well, you're a very habitual person. You've been just flooded with these subconscious beliefs, and it's not easy to change them. And yet it's easy to change them. I just told you how. I thought I could write the book, The Sultan's Seven Secrets, send it out there, and then everybody would read it and just go do it.
Yeah.
And I've learned.
Turns out.
People need help, and I needed help. I had to come up with the manuscript was heavy on concepts, but it was very light on techniques. How do you implement this?
Yeah. Implementation is key, isn't it?
Yeah. So I had to invent and create what worked for me. First thing I did is I created something I called the game that changes everything. And then that led into something called Spellbreakers. Because every one of us is living under a spell, and that spell is our subconscious beliefs. And you can't break it, the spell. You can't get out of it. It is what it is always, until you know how to break the spell.
Yeah.
And then the most beautiful part is you can cast, so to speak, brand new spells that are productive, happy, successful, fun. Well, coming up with the techniques, first, to make it work for me, which I did rather quickly, but then people started knocking on my door and saying, hey, I noticed you driving that nice Mercedes and you live in this beautiful home. And would you talk to me? You're obviously doing well. You know, talk to me. How do you do it?
Because I guess you're right. Let's say the Jeff that was earning, say, $60,000 a year.
Yeah.
Want to know, how have you gone from that to then, let's say, trebling it? And, you know, how have you gone from here to here?
Yeah. So in my own way, I did for them what this beautiful woman did for me. I would teach them the seven secrets, and that's all I have to offer.
Yeah.
I'm just passing on a gift that was given to me and has made my life absolutely magical since that day. When you understand who you are, this part, maybe I better not go too deep into, but the first thing that Musa learned when he died is that he was still alive. Mm-hmm. He had two bodies, not one. He had a spirit body that was still very much alive. And what he learned was that's the one that matters. That's the one that has the force of life in it. His physical body was back in the cave, dead. Couldn't feel anything, can't do anything. Without the spirit body in it, it's just a lifeless lump of tissue.
Mm-hmm.
It's the spirit body that is immortal, and it literally is a child of two godly parents. Now, this might freak some people out, and I don't want to go too far into this because it might clash with your religious beliefs or lack of them or whatever. But if you just think to yourself, well, what if that's true? Is that maybe how do I feel about if I were to believe that versus believing what I used to, that, you know, it's just there's nothing after death and I have no value really. I'm just a scourge on the planet Earth. I'm killing Mother Earth.
Just a vehicle. Yeah.
What belief feels better? Well, for me, believing that I'm a child of God. There is somebody really powerful who cares deeply about me. I love the band Made of Light and Love. I love believing in that. Okay. Change your feelings, change your life. You're going to need help doing this, but that's how I spend my days now. I have all kinds, besides the book, which you can download, by the way, for free. I'm going to tell you how to do that so that you can start speaking the language of the gods. Start dabbling in it, playing around with it tonight. Speak it all day tomorrow. And if you do, you're going to see little weird coincidences pop up. There are going to be things that match the feelings you're generating on purpose in your imagination, but not necessarily the imagery you're using to create those feelings. Remember, subconscious mind listens to feelings. It doesn't listen to your thoughts. Sometimes it matches that imagery perfectly, but not always. So to change your feelings, you've got to learn to move your focus from the physical world, any problems, anything that's not working out there. If your bank account isn't full or it's coming down fast and you're getting scared, you have to stop being scared. So take your focus off of that and create an imaginary bank account that's full and getting fuller. Use any triggers that help you do this. Imagine yourself being wealthy until you can feel what it's like to be wealthy. Get an old checkbook and write in it any number. It's your imagination. You can have it any way you want.
Yeah.
Get lost in these beautiful make-believe scenarios that make you feel good. Create, if your wife's name is Jane or your husband's name is Jim and it's not going so well, create Jim number two, the perfect version of Jim. How does the perfect version of Jim treat me? What does the perfect version of Jim say? You can get so good at this that in the middle of an argument with Jim number one, you can see very clearly in your imaginary, in your mind's eye, Jim number two standing next to you. He's on your side. And as you're talking with Jim number one, Jim number two in your imagination will talk to you. He will give you good advice. He might say something like, hey, Jim number one over there, all that ranting, everything he's doing, it's just because he doesn't know for sure that you love him. Tell him you love him. And then you say, Jim, you know I love you, right? And all of a sudden he stops ranting And he might say, no, to be honest, I don't, because you don't show me. I don't know.
Need to hear it.
And now you say, Jim too might tell you. Tell him, yes, I do. And how do I need to show you? And then Jim too might say, girl, he's telling you how you can make him fall in love with you, cherish you, do anything for you. Listen. And you do. And the next thing you know, I mean, literally, 2 months later, your friends and family might come up to you and say, what the hell happened to you two? Are so like little lovebirds. What did you do? 2 months ago, you were fighting and coming over here and complaining about him. Hey, listen, this can happen so fast, it will blow your mind. But although it's simple to do, right? I mean, change your feelings, change your life. And yeah. I told you how to do it, imaginary scenarios. It's not simple because of your past training and current limiting subconscious beliefs. But I spend all my days now teaching people the techniques and hacks and tricks, games, that don't help you feel better. They instantly make you feel better.
And how do you...
Your subconscious mind is listening.
Is that generally in person or you do it virtually as well?
Well, I can't now because I have thousands and thousands of people who are doing this and seeing the results and then want to learn more and more because this goes on forever, yeah. Getting better and better at it.
You've come to a good point, Nick. So I was going to say to you, could you share with us one or two like great examples of people that have, used the framework and created great results from it? Because I love hearing that kind of thing.
Well, listen, people have taken this and, started out just making like $80,000 more. But then once they could see that and believe it, it changed their paradigm. And now, they go on to make $500,000 a year, $1 million a year, $2 million.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you an illustrative story because this really nails it. I did a challenge, what I call the 5-day challenge, where I go into each of these 7 principles deeply. And there was a lady, and then I offer this workshop, which is, okay, you've learned the concepts, now come and learn the techniques, how to do it. So there was a lady, at the time, I charged a little bit of money, like $700 or $800, to come to that workshop because I had to put it on. It's way cheaper now, but just to give you an idea, she at the end said, Jeff, I want you to put your money where your mouth is. I want you to promise me that if I take the workshop and learn how to implement these concepts,
yeah,
that I'll get my money back and more. And I said, absolutely, I can promise you that.
Yeah, go for it.
But then, of course, the look in her eye, the skepticism, everybody can promise anything. So yeah. I said, listen to me, tomorrow morning, jump on a Zoom conference, me and you, and I will teach you a technique, a game. It's just a gimmick that will force you to get in the feeling place of extra money coming to you that isn't because you worked harder, not because your husband took on extra work. None of that. It's just going to come to you in a weird way. And I said, jump on tomorrow morning at 10. Well, all of a sudden, everybody started texting and chatting and saying, I want to hear it.
I want that, yeah.
So I said, okay, everybody, you're all welcome to join that Zoom conference in the morning. There were about 30 people who joined it. Now, Anthony, you know the world. You've been around a while. If I didn't know for a fact that this would work,
yeah,
would I A, promise her that it will, and then B, let 30 people listen to it?
Yeah.
No, I know it works. So I taught her this technique, this gimmick. And while I was teaching her, when I teach it to you, it will tune you into whatever amount of money you decide you want to get. And so we kind of negotiated because it's, you got to believe in it. And so if it's too far out there, you can't believe in it. And then you get thrown off. You don't feel it. So for her, it was $1,000. She could believe it. She could feel it. She could believe that $1,000 could come to her in an unexpected way.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, other people wrote down $3,000, $5,000. I didn't know this because they're just doing what I'm telling them without me even seeing them. I was listening. I was talking to her. And one lady wrote down $10,000. Another lady wrote down $80,000. Because that's what they could believe in based on their circumstances. All right. 3 weeks later, Elisa gets a check from her mother. It wasn't her birthday. It was her brother's birthday. They all went to dinner. Her mother never gave cash because she likes to give gifts.
Yeah.
But it wasn't Elisa's turn to get a gift. Her mother hands her a check, an envelope with a check in it for $1,000 even, and a note that says, just because I love you.
Mm.
At first, Elisa did not recognize that this is the coincidence, the evidence of the feeling she's been flooding her subconscious mind with for 3 weeks. And here it is. But it hit her, and she came on. This was during the workshop. She participated in the workshop, which is a 12-week program.
Yeah.
So she comes on so excited to tell me and the group that she got her $1,000. Well, one by one, those little yellow hands start coming up in the upper left-hand corner. And as I call on them, one guy's like, I got my $3,000. Another guy, I got my $5,000. This lady, I got my $10,000. And then here comes a lady named Julie. I got my $80,000.
Wow. Where did the $80,000 come from?
Told the story. So instead of telling the Julie story or the $10,000 story, it's fun to teach people Elisa's story, the $1,000 unexpected money. Anyone can believe in something like that happening.
Yeah.
But I'm going to leave you with this promise.
Mm.
You are a child of God. That spirit body that is in and around your physical body, it's animating that body. That is an immortal child of God. What do children do? They grow up to be some version of their parents, right?
Yeah.
Who's your parent? Who are your parents? Well, number one, if you can put any label on them, they are creators. And you're a junior creator.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the Bible is there the story of the creation of the world? Well, there's an interesting part in chapter 2 that I'm going to have you go read. This has nothing to do, this account has nothing to do other than indirectly in the physical creation of the world. This is an account of the spirit creation of the world, like a master architect taking 6 days of his time. And by the way, I'm an architectural designer. I can design a beautiful home in 6 days.
Yeah.
How do I do that? By imagining it, there's that word again, in such detail that I can see it in my mind's eye and have the feelings associated with that flat arch for this home or that 8-foot door. And I can put in a square window or a complete arch window. I can mess with it in my mind until it's just right. And how do I know? Because it feels great. Looks great in my mind and feels the way I want it to feel. And once I've got it just right, I sketch it out. I do the floor plan on the computer, but I draw what I see in my mind's eye. And now I have 4 elevations. I've got a floor plan. I can hand that to anybody, any draftsman. And they turn it into a set of blueprints. And then any builder can build it in the physical realm.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in a home that I created first spiritually in my imagination. But everything about this home in the physical matches. I can show you the plans, all the sketches. It matches the spirit creation. You can do the exact same thing with your life. Imagine it out. Identify what you want. Design your life. Write it down. Grab pictures that depict this life you want. Make statements. I have X number of dollars in the bank. And don't do the stupid affirmations of, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. Your subconscious mind doesn't play that game.
No, you're not. Yeah.
It knows you're only saying that because you're poor and you wish you were rich.
And you don't believe it. Yeah.
Here's what you do. Ask this question. What would it feel like to be rich? And get specific. What would it feel like to have $500,000 cash hidden somewhere in my house and $2 million in my bank account and another $5 million in assets out there somewhere? How would that feel?
Yeah.
Your subconscious mind loves this game. It'll play that all day long and it will instantly feed you the feelings associated with your imaginary scenario of having $1 million or $500,000 stashed away in a secret room in your house. That's how you generate the feelings of the life you want. Now, the crazy thing is your subconscious mind is feeding you those feelings, but now it's also hearing them, feeling them, believing them. And if you do enough of that, weird coincidences are going to pop up. Here's the last thought. Your feelings are commands to your inner genie. You cannot expect your inner genie to go get you anything that you've never commanded it to go get you. So if I ask you, Anthony, when's the last time that you've felt what it's like to have $1 million in the bank?
Yeah, like never.
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 And believe me, your subconscious mind has never heard that in feelings. But what if you decided, like tonight, to get lost in an imaginary scenario, however it best gets you there, of having $1 million cash in a chest hidden somewhere, or $1 million in the bank. And here's the checking account to prove it. I've written right in there my balance. It's $1 million. And you get lost in that until you can feel exactly what it's like to have $1 million in your imagination. You do enough of that and you're going to have $1 million. You command your inner genie in the language and come to one of my workshops. Download the book first.
Yeah.
Go to a challenge, go to a workshop. You're not invited to an accelerator program until you've gone through a challenge and the workshop. But I teach people how to do this. It goes counter to everything they've been trained and taught.
Yep.
But it works. And when you do it, it works every time. You're not different from me. I'm not different from Julie, who got her 80,000, or Elisa, who focused on 1,000 and got it.
Yeah.
It just works. And that might be a little hard for you to believe, but I'll tell you, once you see it, even the first time, it is such a relief. All you got to do is get your inner genie to go get you what you want, but you have to command it in the right language so it knows what to go get. And then it goes and gets it. So the world's formula for success is decide what you want and then work really hard. And who knows, might work out, right? Mm-hmm. But the Sultan's, the man made of light's formula for success has an element of magic to it. Identify what you want. Pretend that that's the way it is right now until you can feel it. And do that with a little bit of consistency. You can come out, but get back in it.
Yeah.
And hit a certain level of intensity. Your subconscious mind will hear those feelings, believe them, and then go make true, or let's use the word congruent, in your physical world, what it believes is true about you. And you told it a new belief in the language of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's going to bring that it's going to make your path cross with that partner, that new partner who has 50% of a business. You got the other 50%, and now the two of you together have a tiger by the tail. Yeah. You're making more money than you can count. That happens every day in this country, and it could happen to you. Download the book.
I was going to say, this is why I was looking forward to speaking to you, because I've looked at your work and I was like, it's so different to what guys will have read or listened to before. But also because I think, you know, I spoke before we started recording how you realize the world, a lot of people see the world in a very kind of a tunnel vision, and yeah. they struggle to believe anything outside of what they get told on the TV can happen or is possible or is real. And I've really tried to open my head up to so much more in the last few years to say, hold on, you've got to give everything a chance, and you've got to, you know, assume that just because other people say things can't be possible, that they are possible, if that makes sense.
You're going to, if you download the book, or you can go to Amazon.com and buy it. It's a number one selling book on Amazon, but just get the video book, the version of the book that's me telling the story, reading the book, but also ad-libbing, adding some things. And try this with anything. Try changing how you feel by generating these beautiful imaginary scenarios and kind of staying in it, or at least having it running in your background of your mind all the time. And look for the evidence, coincidences. You will see them. And once you do, your confidence is going to go right through the roof. And then what? It's like being in a dream, if this has ever happened to you, and realizing, oh my gosh, I'm dreaming. Mm. What do you do when that happens? Well, you take control of the dream. Instead of sludging along looking for your car that you can't find because you parked it for some weird reason 5 miles away, and now you're looking for, you realize, yeah, I can just go to my car like that, or I don't even need a car. In dreams, I can fly. Mm. And you take off flying in your dream. This is the same thing. Once you master this, it's the same thing. Life is a game, and I can teach you how to play it. I can teach you how to wake up from the dream, the nightmare, and in a way, of what you've been in. Because from the day you got here, people in positions of authority started telling you who you are, what group you belong to, how we act in this group, what you do and what you don't do, what you say and what you don't say. And you believed it. You wanted to fit in.
Yeah.
Hey, but now you're the adult. You don't have to listen to an old teacher. You don't have to listen to even mom and dad. You're the adult. You decide. You can be anything you want to be. But the reality is, for most people, like we talked about earlier, you might think, oh, it'd be great to have $500 million. Until you try that dream on, then you might realize, wait a minute, $500 million would own me. My life would be like, yeah. I'd have to be surrounded by security. I'd have to have my kids watched every minute. I don't want $500 million. Let's bring that down to $10 million, or, you know, $18 million would do it.
Yeah.
And I'd be really quiet about it. I wouldn't drive the Lamborghini, maybe. I wouldn't live in the biggest home in the state, because you're trying on these dreams the way you'd go in and try on a shirt.
Yeah.
Now that's a really nice silk shirt, but I'm going to a picnic. You know, I just want this nice, really nice t-shirt.
Well, I think this is why it's great, because, you know, for me, the podcast was all about bringing thought-provoking content. And what I would challenge guys to do, that if they take the steps that you talked about, is to come back and let me know what can happen, you know, what does happen, and I will implement it as well. Because I always think these things, it's very easy for people to poo-poo ideas, and you say, but have you tried it? And often people will be like, oh, well, no, because, and you go, okay, so you don't know because you haven't tried it. So that's what I think is the exciting part of it, is what's possible.
Here's the beauty of this one. you have nothing to lose but a whole lot to gain by trying it. The worst that can happen to you if you spend 5 minutes lost in a beautiful daydream experiencing something you really would like to experience in your imagination until you can feel what it's like.
Yeah.
Worst that can happen is you had 5 minutes of fun in your otherwise kind of stressed out life.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
But what's the best that can happen?
Yeah.
You notice something that pops up, maybe even later that day, that matches the feelings that you were generating on purpose in your imagination. And you go, wait 1 minute. I did that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do more of it.
I love it because it went through my head that there's very limited, to state the obvious, limited downside, but like literally unlimited upside. So that's what I like to deal in these days is that, you know, the what's possible, because I think that's where life gets exciting. Yeah. And so where do you take this now, Jeff? Because I guess for you, you know, you're teaching other people, but what's possible for you, if that makes sense? What's the big thing for you?
I tell everybody that I create dream sheets and dream boards because they're the triggers that keep you in your beautiful dream world and don't allow you to get sucked into the cave of wonders, which represents the physical realm and the problems and worries and concerns.
Mm.
So everything that is on my dream boards now is in my real physical world, but none of it was when I put the pictures up. And that is where it's at. So I've had multi-million dollar homes, very fancy cars. None of that really turns me on anymore. Mm. What turns me on now, I have a couple farms over in Belize. My house is 600 square feet. It's 20 by 30, but I love being there. I want to retire there. I want to spend a lot more time there. And that's where I'm living in my head all the time. In the book, you'll hear a great story about a certain type of Land Rover, a Land Rover Defender that I decided I'd like to own. And I put it up on my dream boards and on my dream sheets and on my phone and just enjoyed driving that Land Rover in my imagination.
Hmm.
Wasn't urgent. I have, you know, newer model, or I guess you call it older model. No, newer Land Rovers that my family drives. I drive one. My wife drives one. So I thought getting that old Land Rover Defender would be fun, but it's not urgent. It's okay to just enjoy it in my imagination and on my dream boards. Okay, I went to Belize to check on my farm. And as I'm driving along, I see something out of the corner of my eye, and for like, you know, weird impression, weird coincidence, I look and I see the front of a green Land Rover Defender. So on a whim, on an impression, I back up and pull in there. You got to be careful pulling into people's property in Belize. It's a little, they can be a little uptight more than here, but guy comes out, very nice. I stay in my rental car and I just ask, you know, hey, is that yours? Yes. Would you be willing to sell that? Now, why? I didn't even, as the words came out of my mouth, I'm like, Jeff, you don't, what are you going to do? You know, you can take that up to the farm and let it sit for two months till you come back and drive it for a couple of weeks and it'll ruin it, you know. But he's like, yeah, I'll sell it. You know, and I'm like, how much? $20,000 US. And I'm like, okay, well, thanks. You know, $20,000, it's a great price. I mean, if you bought the same car here, it's $40,000.
Mm.
But I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm not ready to buy it yet. So, but thank you. You know, great talking to you. So I leave. On the way back, just before I turn in the rental car, I fill it up with gas. This is about 20 miles from where he was. He's there in the Land Rover, the green Land Rover. And he comes over to me and he's like, hey, man, you still want this Land Rover? And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not ready to buy it right now. And he's like, what if I made you the best deal on planet Earth? I said, I got to take my family to Guatemala. I need cash.
Mm.
And I was going to say, well, even then, I'm just not ready to buy one. But what came out of my mouth, what my subconscious mind fed me, what's the bottom dollar that you would take for this thing. Knock off all the Tijuana crap. Yeah. I'm not going to dicker. You say the number, and if it's right, I'll buy it. If it's not right, I'm not buying it. Maybe later.
Yeah.
He says $12,000. So we shook hands. I gave him what I had on me is like, you know, $5,000. Gave him that right there on the spot.
Yeah.
And told him I'd bring the rest when I come back in 2 months.
Mm.
And that's what I did. Now I own that green Land Rover Defender. And part of the best fun of going over there when I check on my farms is driving that beautiful Land Rover Defender 110 all over the place. I love it.
I laugh because Emma always says, well, we're living in the countryside and there's a lot of, you know, the brand new Defenders as well. But Emma always wants a Land Rover because it'd be great to be able to chuck their kids in and have a dog and stuff like that. And we go past one in our village and I always say, like, it's funny, we kind of like, you know, we envisage that one day we will have one of those as an extra car. So it's a good story to finish on, to be honest.
It's a good dream.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, look, well, Jeff, I know I've taken up, what is the time there? I don't even know.
I've got 2:35 ish.
Yeah. So it's 20 to 10 at night here. So the rain's dribbling outside and it's pitch black and what have you. So it's a different world altogether.
Time to go to bed.
But this is why I love the podcast. And I say this on a lot of them, because what this has given me is the ability to connect and become friends. We had a good, great chat before we pressed record as well. Connect with great men like yourself, who you would never have probably met before, you know, again, in you know, even if you lived 10 lifetimes, just because the world is such an interesting place. So I appreciate your time and also appreciate all your wisdom and everything, your knowledge you've imparted us. It's been great.
Well, that's high praise and I appreciate it, but I feel the same way. And if you ever want to do round two and get into more of the techniques and why they work and how they work and how you talk to your subconscious mind in a way that is effective and successful, let's do that. Maybe, yeah. 3 months, 6 months, whatever works for you. I'd love to come back on.
I was just thinking somewhere like, you know, just after New Year or something like that, because it's
perfect.
Yeah, that'd be great. And how could I say no to that? Because it's my head is like, of course I want to know more. So yeah, that would be awesome. All right. Well, Jeff, I appreciate all your time. It's been great to speak to you. And yeah, we will definitely do round two very soon.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming on. You're doing great work. I'm really proud of what you're doing, if I have the right to be proud.
You do. I appreciate it, mate. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Anthony. Cheers. Take care.